This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always finds the best travel deals, picks the right cards, and somehow ends up in first class for the price of coach? I know that guy. Sometimes I've even been that guy. Well, Smart Travel is like that friend, but in podcast form. They cover all things travel finance, like the quick math for knowing when to pay with points or just swipe your card. How to book busy season trips without the busy season sticker shock. Which flight deals are actually deals and which are just clickbait. Hey, times are tight these days, and we don't want to travel dumb. We want to travel smart. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired like 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Graham Elwood. And before we get to Graham, we're going to have a few announcements here. And first and foremost, our website is traveltalespodcast.com. Go there. You can find photos of our guests. You can see links to their social media. You can see links to our social media. And that is, of course, Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Let's get those numbers up, everyone. That's where I want you to go. Follow us on Instagram. We also have a Facebook page. You can follow us there. We are on all your streaming services. And if you are there, please give us a good rating because that helps more people find us. That'd be a cool thing for you to do. Also, if you think you'd be right for the show or you know somebody be right for the show or maybe you want to ask me some travel questions or just tell me I'm awesome, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. traveltalespodcast@gmail.com.
I like it, Mike.
Graham Elwood.
Good set of plugs.
A three-time visitor here to the show. You are our second three-time guest. J. Keith Van Stratton just became our first three-time guest. Now you.
J. Keith. Love that man. But God bless him.
It's been a little while since you've been here. A few years since you've joined us on the show.
10.
At least 10 for the first time. You were like one of the very first. So, and that was 2011.
Wow.
First year.
What were we talking about? Afghanistan or what were we talking
about?
Yeah,
a lot of that. And then you had just, I think, you had gone to Asia for the second time after your second visit. I think you had been.
Yes, I did shows in 2014 and 2015 is when I went to Asia.
Yeah, and I don't think I've talked to you since COVID on this show. Personally, I have, but not for the show here. So we're not going to, we'll go back to the COVID times, but you are here visiting in town for how long?
I don't know, maybe a week or two. I was doing a voiceover thing, which was really cool, and I just talked to my agent, and I was like, should I stay longer? She goes, well, no, this company, we just had a guy that get called back, and the last time we recorded with them was in May. So she's like, don't worry about it. So I just had some of their little business to take care of here. I was going through a stack of mostly nonsense from my PO box, but a couple of key things, some tax information I needed to get. But yeah, I'm in town for about a week or two and weather's great, seeing friends.
Yeah, you're living in Bangkok now. Yeah. Tell me how this happened and when did it start? I knew you left last year. I mean, I know when, tell the people is what I'm saying. Because, so for the background story, Graham and I, we started comedy together back in Chicago in the 90s. Time we call the 90s.
Our first gig together was the Skyline Cafe in Appleton, Wisconsin.
Oh my God.
And we shared the condo. We had known each other just from doing shows around in Chicago because we all, you know, had mutual friends. And then everyone was like, oh, you got to meet this guy, Mike Siegel. You got to meet this guy, Mike
you
Siegel. You got to meet him. And man, I'm woefully disappointed. But I
know. Man, God. Who's saying you got to meet me? I don't know.
No, you were very funny. I remember, I always remember the first joke of yours. We were working together in Appleton, and it's still one of my favorite jokes of yours. You're like, I'm drinking a Diet Coke, you know, and a friend of mine goes, oh, man, why are you drinking Diet Coke? It's bad for you. You know, it's caused, it's hurt, caused cancer.
Cancer in rats.
And lab rats. And you're like, good. Fuck rats. I was like,
ah, classic Siegel. Classic.
This is great. I was like, oh, this cat's funny. Yeah. We shared a condo together and then we became buddies and we, you know, I came out, you were in New York and then I came to LA and you came out to, you know, and all of us from Chicago were out here. And so that's.
Yeah. So this past year, so you lived in LA for over 20 years.
Yeah, 30, really. Okay, 30 I mean, years. 30 years minus 2 years of Hawaii during the pandemic.
Yeah. And we'll get to that later. But last year, you had decided, that's it, I'm going to Asia. Was there one last straw? Was
oh, boy.
There was many straws.
You sure you want me to talk politics on your show?
No, I don't want to. Politics aside. But I mean, there was like, you know, there's a lifestyle choice. There's weather and surfing, but money plays a factor too.
It's a huge factor. I mean, like my expenses are probably cut in half. I mean... My rent is a third of what I was paying in LA. And I lived in a decent place in LA. You know, I had my last apartment before I moved, you know, it was a nice building with a gym and a pool and a hot tub and all that stuff. So it was several things. So I went to Thailand and Cambodia for the very first time in August of 2024. And I did shows out and there was a club in Bangkok that is now closed, that I performed at. I'd never been out there. And then I went up to Chiang Mai and mutual friend, I don't know if Todd Sawyer, anyway, just a couple, Tom Agnew's up. There's a couple comics up in Chiang Mai. I went down to Phuket to surf and I went to Angkor Wat in Cambodia. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. And I met a lot of comics in Bangkok who either live there or just a lot of comics that live in Southeast Asia. They live in Singapore or Hong Kong and they're just, there was a lot of like shows to be done. So then I came back a year ago, February and March, I did a longer tour. I was gone for like 2 months where I did a show in Hong Kong. I was at some crypto conference and then I did Singapore, which was awesome. And I hadn't been to Singapore or Hong Kong in 20 years. So it was great to go back there. And then I went to the Philippines just to surf, which was interesting. Kind of at a sidebar, there's not a lot of English-speaking comedy. I guess there's one English-speaking club, but there's not as much English-speaking comedy for expats in the Philippines as there is in these other cities for whatever reason. So I just surfed there. But then I'd never been to Vietnam. I went to Hanoi, Ho Chi Minh City, Nha Trang, and Da Nang. And I was like, wow. I fell in love with Vietnam. Loved it. And Da Nang is sort of like a little mini Waikiki in some sense.
Yeah.
Good surfing, beach town. I rented an electric scooter and just drove. I mean, went to temple. I mean, the vibe in Asia is just more my speed, you know, in terms of, I'm a vegetarian. It is tough to be a vegetarian in Asia because they eat meat with everything.
Yeah, unless it's India.
India is easy. But even Thailand is a very curious thing because the Thai Buddhist monks don't have to be vegetarian. It's a unique, it's Southern Buddhism, I was told, is different. So in other countries that have Buddhism, it's easy to find vegetarian food because the monks, right? But for the most part, they're still good. You can still, man, I found good vegan restaurants and stuff like that. But it was like, so anyway, this was February and March last year, and it was after the fires, and so some friends of mine were staying. They were displaced. They didn't lose their home, but they were displaced. Their neighborhood was kind of shut down, and they stayed at my place. And so I was just in Asia for 6 weeks a year ago going, I could live here. I mean, like, there's shows. And I came back, and there was some cool work stuff to be done here in L.A. But then I was just like, it kind of feels like, I don't know, it just doesn't feel stable here, man. I got to be honest, it just doesn't. And then just seeing the cost of living. And then also, since the strikes, as you know, it's show business work is really hard right now. It's a most, and I know so many people with, you know, DPs, camera operators, and they are, you know, working at the DMV. Everyone's getting day jobs or racking up debt. And I was just like, I'm in the Producers Guild and there's some projects I was working on and trying to get money for. And it just, everyone was saying the same thing. There's no one's giving up money. None of the studios are spending a lot of money unless you're just like a massive A-list person. The like mid-level stuff just wasn't happening. So it was a lot of reasons. It was lifestyle. It was also economics, but also work. So when I was in Thailand a year and a half ago for the first time, I met with the Thai Film Commission. And there's a really good film and TV infrastructure in Thailand. People don't realize necessarily, it's not just, you know...
Everybody knows like Hong Kong cinema and like Korean cinema is really hot right now.
Right. But Thailand, people think people just go to like foreign people shoot in Thailand, which there's plenty of that, but there's a whole Thai film and TV industry. And the Thais love horror movies and you know, scary and ghosts, and they love it. It's a big part of their mythology. So like I noticed it when I was in Cambodia going to Angkor Wat a year and a half ago. Next to my hotel was a little multiplex, like five or six screens. And I was like, I just want to see what movies are in there. No Western movies, all Thai movies that were subtitled in Khmer, which is the language of Cambodia. And I was like, oh. And so I started doing more research, but I also realized, you know, there's a lot of opportunity in terms of, and I met some filmmakers. A good friend of mine is an entertainment attorney. He's also produced two or three movies in Thailand. So he was telling me, yeah, there's good production. There's good crew. So I was like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do this. And, you know, so I decided like I'm doing it. And I was going to sublet my place in LA and some people that all fell out. And I was just like, I'm going. I just sold everything and was like, I'm going. I can always come. And friends of mine would go, Graham, LA's not going anywhere. If you want to come back, you can always come back. And it's just getting in an apartment and a car or whatever. It's you know, it's like not that big of a deal.
What was the hardest thing to sell? Was it your car?
No. Well, in terms of emotionally, it was weird because I've had a car since I graduated college. I've never not had a car. You know, New Yorkers can't identify with this, but I was like, when I sold my car, I was in a hotel. I sold my car and moved out of my apartment like within the same 2 days. And I was in a hotel by LAX for like two nights before I flew out. And I was like, and I had a rental car or whatever. And I remember I was taking a shower. I'd gotten done. Everything was done. Everything was in the storage unit. My apartment was, it sold. Everything was done. I had three suitcases to take with me to Asia. And I was taking a shower and I was like, I've never had a car before. Or never not had a car.
Right.
And I felt a little bit of a freedom, like, because I had the car payment and the insurance keeps going up. I love the freedom of a car since I've been here. I've got a rental car and I do, we'll get to Bangkok in a second. Bangkok's got some cool stuff, but it is big city. It's public transportation, which it's not my vibe. It's, you know what I mean? Like I became a beach guy when I moved out.
Yeah,
we grew up in Chicago, but I became a Californian man. I mean,
you're not a subway guy?
Not a subway guy. I mean, it's cool. The public transportation in Bangkok is great and it's convenient and I'm close to a stop. You know, it's like New York or where it's all, you know, it's all get your apartment close to one of the line kind of thing. But not having a car, I was like, there was a freedom, but also like, this is weird. I can't just jump in my car and go wherever I want. It's just a weird thing to adjust to. Like, and the second or third month I was in Thailand, the first month is just sort of like fun. This is cool. Getting, you know, figuring stuff out. The second month I moved into an apartment. Okay, this is great. The third month I started to feel a little homesick and was like, oh man, I want to just get in my car and drive. I just want to, you know, and you got to take a bus to go to the beach and it's an hour. And it was just a couple of those things. I was like, man. But yeah. And then, you know, like we've talked about, I've gotten Mexican food the two nights I've been here. I've had Mexican.
Number one thing people miss after their friends and family.
Yeah, it's Mexican food. And it's really, I found one little place in Bangkok that's decent. I walked into another place and met the chef who's from Mexico City. And I'm like, oh, that's good. But you know, man, come on, California, dude. Yeah, every street corner, there's amazing, like you can get the greatest burrito in the world 4 minutes from wherever you live in California.
I mean, after Italian, Thai is probably my, you know, number one food or number two food, whatever. But the, even you were like, and you love it too, but even you were like, man, when you came back, you're like, I do not want Thai food. don't want to see it. Is there something you're particularly tired of? They use a certain, it's not coconut, is it bamboo?
Basil.
Yeah, lemongrass.
Lemongrass.
Lemongrass is the thing that it so reminds me of Thai food whenever I smell it.
Look, I love Thai food and I eat it all the time, but it's, and I can't wait to eat it when I get back there. But think about you living in America. How often do you have Thai food? 3 times a month?
Yeah, maybe. Even that.
Once or twice a month. I mean, if you're really, really into Thai, you maybe get it once a week.
Right. Every day.
But you know, every day. So like, and this, you know, it's the street food is very affordable. The most expensive food is Western food.
Yeah.
Okay. But Bangkok is a massive city that has every kind of anything you want. I mean, it's got every kind of thing. I mean, it's got indoor beach volleyball. It's got a wave pool. It's got every kind of food under the sun. I was walking back from some gig one night or something, and I found a falafel place, and I was like, oh. So, yeah, I mean, and let me tell you something. The Thai food in America is not for Thais. It's for Americans. The Thai food in Thailand is for Thai people.
Okay. Meaning that it's
spicy. Like your eyes are going to fall out. They always ask, how spicy you want to go? Like,
yeah.
I love papaya salad in America. I don't think I can eat it in Thailand because they ramp that shit up there.
Yeah. They're, no, I've done a media trip there, more than one, and they would always dumb it down. You know, I like spicy food. So like, but for the journalists, especially any white people come in there, they really tone it down. And they're always asking, is it too spicy for you? Is it okay? I was like, no, I want to eat what you eat. Please just give me that.
Be careful.
All right. And then, yeah, I didn't have it too bad. India, they finally got me in terms of like spice because I could not get them to make it spicy enough because they were so paranoid about, you know, overdoing it. But Thai just has that reputation of being really spicy. So people who've never had it automatically just, that's their first brain. Their brain goes right there first. Oh, I heard it's very spicy. And it's just like, well, it doesn't have to be.
Well, the thing that too, I learned a lot of interesting stuff in Thailand too, like especially Pad Thai. I know this couple and they're both Thai. One's half British. The guy's half British and half Thai and she's Thai, but she was educated in Australia. So they both have sort of Western and, but one of the things they told me, they go, each Thai person, he pointed to his girlfriend and he said, her Pad Thai tastes different than mine because the way you're kind of raised in Thailand is you season your food your way. Mm-hmm. Like, especially, so like, at all the restaurants, they'll have all these different spices and a little thing for sugar. And everybody makes it their own way. So you're sort of taught as a child to kind of develop your own palate. Whereas we just like, whatever, however it's made, that's what you do. Maybe you put Tabasco on something or whatever, but you're going to eat it the same way I'm going to eat it for the most part.
Right.
Whereas in Thailand, it's completely different. And also like, man, I'm just walking around the streets of Bangkok and I'm trying this place and that place. And, you know, I'm walking into places where I'm the only white guy there. I mean, this is not for foreigners. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like all in Thai and I'm pointing at pictures, you know? And so that place, they're just like, this is how we make it, man. So best of luck.
Right. Yeah. Good luck to you.
So like, I love papaya salad, but I have to be really careful because they light that thing on fire. But then I had a friend of mine make me krapao, which is their like main dish. And they made a vegetarian version for me. It was really good. But then it's also, you're learning too, we're getting kind of, we're getting the Chipotle version. Not that there's great Thai restaurants in America and in LA, but they're giving us the sort of easy version for us. But you start going into the different provinces like Isan, which is the northeastern part of the country. They have a whole different type of cuisine. I mean, and Isan is very known as its own kind of unique thing. The women are like, they're like, oh, these Isan women, they're going to snatch you up. Cause they like, you know, like if you go there, you're going to never leave. And like I've had several Thai men tell me that. It's like, oh, if you foreign guys go to Isan, you ain't leaving. And their food is it's darker in color from what I can see. And then there's all these different regions. I mean,
I know up in Chiang Mai, they say, you know, the more northern you go, the less spicy it gets.
Yeah.
And in Chiang Mai, there was some certain dishes that were only really specific to Chiang Mai. up north.
That's a whole different region. Yeah, up there, Chiang Mai and Chiang Rai is different. And then if you go even south, like I did some shows down in Kaulanta, which is an island south of Krabi. You get way in the south and it's way more, it's more Middle Eastern influence because there's more Muslims down there.
Yeah.
Like down south, I mean, a lot of the women are wearing hijabs. There's mosques. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. There's like Buddhist temples and mosques down there. It's a whole nother vibe. And so that influences that food. And down there, they're sort of, they're, you know, they border with Malaysia. Yeah. Where up north, you're bordering with Laos and
Cambodia,
Burma
and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like you said, you went to Vietnam and you checked it out. There's a lot of expats and digital nomads living in Vietnam as well. Mm-hmm. And you're a surfer and better surf in Vietnam than there is in Thailand. And it's even cheaper, as cheap as Thailand is.
It's
Vietnam's even cheaper.
It's amazing.
So what was the thing that made you not pick Vietnam over Thailand?
It was literally just the entertainment industry aspect of it was the main thing. Because like, if I just
to live, you might have stayed in
Da Nang. If you just said, where's my favorite place, I'd go Da Nang.
Okay.
I mean, and then Phuket, there's good surf and mellow vibes down there, but the surf is way more seasonal, whereas Da Nang and Nha Trang, I mean, Vietnam is all coast. I mean, Vietnam, man, the cost of living in Da Nang, and there was a cool expat community there, I think it's called Workshop Da Nang, is sort of this expat hub. They have classes, they have shows, and so that's where I did the show there. And the guy who runs it, Christoph, is a really cool guy. He's from the UK, and just a cool, really cool vibe in Da Nang. And plus, it's like Vietnamese are pretty chill, so it's beach vibe, and it's like, right. You know, Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City are really cool cities with all this stuff to do, but they're big, you know, it's a big city vibe. Where Da Nang is a little, and Nha Trang is even smaller than Da Nang. Like I know a comic, Simone Park, she does shows down in Nha Trang, and Nha Trang is really cool, and I see why she digs it there. So if there wasn't like all of the film and TV stuff mainly emanating out of Bangkok, I would be in Da Nang.
Okay. And in terms of, is one visa harder to get than the other?
So this is a big thing now that's happening in Vietnam is it has an advantage. It has a tactical advantage because it's one government. There's no parties fighting. It's just like, so if we want to do this, we're doing it.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's how it's happening.
Communism.
Yeah. So right now, Vietnam does not have a digital nomad visa. Thailand introduced one a year ago. But I'm told by a Vietnamese person that in their whatever Senate or whatever it's called, parliament, they're introducing a bill to talk, or whatever they would call it, to put that on the ballot, because they're snatching up a lot of the digital nomads now. Because so what happened with Thailand for years, as I'm sure you know and had guests on the show, you could just go there and do a visa run every 90 days. And there's guys living there for 10 years doing this.
They go over to Laos for a day and then turn around and come back in. Yeah, a new 90 days.
Yes. And they were doing that for years. So last year, Thailand started cracking down on that. And what they did, they did two things. First, they introduced the DTV visa, which is, there's several categories within it. There's a digital nomad, but then there's also the soft power one, where you can say you're, you know, studying either Muay Thai, Thai cooking, or to the Thai language. And you go to any of these schools and sign up and get a piece of paper saying, I'm going to be studying here for a year or whatever the course is. But it's a good visa. It's a 5-year visa.
Oh, wow.
And it gives you you can be in Thailand for 6 months, 180 days at a crack, and then literally go across the border and come back. They have no problem with it. But Thailand's always changing. Thailand's government is always, things are always, like, you could, so the big issue, the things they started cracking down on were people running scams. Fake businesses, And right. to be blunt, what I was told, it's the Russians and Israelis. They're okay.
Well, in terms of fake business, you say, well, we have a business here, so we can stay because we're contributing to your economy. But yeah. there is no business?
Yeah, it's fake business. And okay. and you just get like a Thai person or something, or they created illegal businesses. Like, foreigners are not allowed to run certain businesses in Thailand. And so they were getting around that because,
oh, okay.
you know, it's a country that kind of has always... It's always played both sides. I mean, this is what Thailand did. I mean, this is World War II. They're like, hey, Japan looks good. And, oh, Japan's losing. America. You know, woo-hoo! Like, that's sort of their vibe. And so it's very chill. And, hey, sabai, sabai. And, oh, no worry. No problem. But so there, then some people were sort of exploiting that. And you can pay people off.
Sure, yeah.
You know, so there's that kind of stuff. But so they started cracking down on that. And what they're doing is I talked to several like Thai law firms. They want people pushing them into these other visas. So there's a retirement visa you can get at age 50 and over, and it's a very good visa. There's the LTR, long-term resident visa. That's a little more involved. Then they also have, you know, they got a rich guy visa where you can just...
Yeah, like a golden visa.
Yeah, golden visa. You pay 30 grand or whatever, and there's levels that you can get with that. So they're really just trying to push people into these and weed out the scam artists, because there's also people coming in getting bank accounts and doing money laundering.
Oh, yeah.
There's all those scam bot farms in Cambodia. So there's just a lot of that. And they just said, we are cracking down on that.
Okay. I guess that's good.
I think it's good because you are weeding out a lot of the people. You know, every expat community has... the wanderlust people, the retirees, the backpackers, the digital nomads, and then the people that are running from something.
Yeah.
Thailand has way more of that group.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of people running away from stuff there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who are like, have multiple addictions, and they're going to Thailand. And so, you know, Vietnam, you know, you can get drugs and prostitutes anywhere. It's way more readily acceptable. It's easier to get in Thailand. It's like Vegas.
Yeah.
Like, it's right on the street, so it attracts more of that. Whereas like, and then in a country like Vietnam, can you get drugs in that? Sure, but do you want to get caught in Vietnam with yeah. that? Because it ain't just...
I remember in Da Nang, I was offered, you know...
Sure.
All drugs and girls and everything else.
Yeah. That's in the tourist areas, and they have red light districts, but it's not... And every city has the red light district anywhere. But... Thailand, it's just more prevalent. It's like Vegas. It's it's right there on the street. And so, and because of that reputation, and everyone's got stories of, oh, I got busted by the cop and he just drove me to an ATM and case closed. It attracts guys that are head cases, you know, that are just out of their minds. You know, they're just nuts. And you see these old guys and they're just there to do all the sex creep stuff and party. But, you know, and I had that image of it. This is what Thailand is. And you get there and you go, it's a small part of it.
I know. And it's a shame because the people are so nice. And it's called the Land of Smiles for a reason. And that is one of the marked differences between Vietnam and Thailand. Vietnam, they're tough. They're a tough nut to crack. You know, the Vietnamese in Thailand is that big smile and open.
Sawadee. It's so nice
and hospitable. And but, you know, it's a shame as soon as you say, especially us as, you know, men of a certain age.
Yeah.
If you say you're going to Thailand, oh, you're going to Thailand. I'm there to, you know, get some young boys.
Yeah.
You know, and just, it's a shame that that's where everybody's mind goes. And, you know, oh, a lady boy, you got to get some lady. But it's just, you feel bad for the locals. Like, this is something they got to, you know.
Well, it's funny, like, you know, talking with some Thai women who have lived in the West, and they're just like, yeah, I walk down the street and all these men look at me like, oh, are you available? Are you, you know, yeah. And so it creates that. And then me looking the way I walk down the street, I'm just assuming, hey, handsome boy, you want massage? You want boom, boom? You know, mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm not here for that. But it is a shame because Thailand is amazing. I mean, it is really, the people are very wonderful. It is very nice. It is
It's beautiful. It's beautiful
gorgeous.
Islands, beautiful beaches, and there's mountains, there's animals and fauna and flora.
Buddhist temples.
The food is the best.
The food is amazing. There's 800-year-old temples. It's just like hiking. It's just stunning. And Bangkok is a city of somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 million people. It is the most chill big city I've ever been in my life. The first couple weeks I'm there, I'm running up to get to the train. No one's running.
Right.
They missed the train. I'll catch another one, man. Yeah. Like, this is rush hour. And then they're all just like chilling and cool. It is like, and I was just in Tokyo, which is a pretty chill big city by comparison to let's say Manhattan or something like that.
Well, there's chill. And it's organized for sure.
It's organized.
Chill, I don't know, but...
But Tokyo's not chill.
Yeah.
By comparison to Manhattan, yes, Tokyo looks chill.
Yeah.
But compared to Bangkok, Tokyo looks uptight.
I find this around the world. The closer you are to the equator and the hotter it is, the slower people move.
Yeah.
You can't be hustling around. You'll burn up, man.
You walk three blocks in Bangkok certain times of the year, you are drenched in sweat.
How are you dealing with that?
I figured it out. I've been through a couple of the seasons in terms. I got there September and October. It was still rainy season.
Now that's rain. We know rain. This is like buckets.
It just pounds you. So you have to have an umbrella with you at all times.
Uh-huh.
And then there's just certain times where that ain't going to work. And you just have to it's part of their culture because it's just like, hey man, you just need to go in this under, you, everything stops. The next 15 minutes because the storm is insane. And you just... So I got used to that. It was really... I understand why December, January, and even February are called the high season because the weather's perfect. It's 85 every day. The humidity's way down. It's never that hot. You even get some cooler weather at night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really like, oh, this is why everybody comes that time of year because the weather is perfect. I'm told... Starting in April, it's going to start getting really hot and humid again. But I don't know, man. The air conditioning's great everywhere. I'm in a building with a pool, a roof deck pool, and there's just shade everywhere. The subways are really well. They're really good temperature. So
you don't have to say exact numbers and stuff, but if people want to know like a ballpark of like rent and as opposed to America and things like that, and you're monthly expenditures living there without a car.
But without a car.
Like, rent, expenses, food.
I mean, it's really, there's people living there, Westerners, for under $2,000 a month, $1,000, $1,500.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's pretty lean living, personally. But I think if you're making $3,000 a month, you'll live like a king. $2,000 a month, you can have a very nice lifestyle. So in the $2,000 to $3,000 range,
mm-hmm.
total. And I'm talking about total.
That's even more than I thought. Oh, but that's including your utilities, your
that's
power.
That's everything.
Your phone. And
that's your total monthly nut.
Okay.
Apartments, depending on where you want to live, for a one bedroom, like a 30 square meter one bedroom, can go anywhere. The most you could, $700-$800 a month, maybe, if you want to get that high in a really fancy building right in the center of everything.
Right.
The minute you start getting outside, you can. I know guys that live on the other side of the river and they're paying $300 a month. Or people who live maybe five to eight stops away from the center and they're probably paying $400-$500.
So you're in like a fancy area? Yeah. Are you considered like the.
I'm
Gold Coast.
I don't know if that's Gold Coast or fancy area. I'm in a new building. My building is very new. And so, but I know people are like, oh man, living in a slightly older building, but there's all these high rises that all have all these amenities. If you want to live in a building without amenities, the price comes down even more.
Sure.
I know people living in a 2-bedroom, 2-bath, nice building, nice part of town. $1,100 a month to $1,200.
Okay.
And they're splitting that.
Yeah.
And so, the last time I had rent this low.
1985.
No, I'm 97, 98.
Yeah.
In LA.
Well, the other thing is, people worry about is that they go, and one of the reasons people our age tend to leave the country is healthcare. So what is your, I was surprised when you said your Kaiser healthcare here carries over there. Like, you can bill them, because that's not common.
Well, yeah, Kaiser has a thing. I asked them, I'm going to be traveling in Asia for a long time. And they said, well, if you have any procedures over there, pay out of pocket, send us the bill, and we'll reimburse you. I think it's like up to 80 or 90%. But like,
wow, okay.
So I was like, oh, great, I'm covered. And then just the out-of-pocket costs is not...
Yeah,
now,
it's not...
Everyone's riding motorbikes around there, and that, yeah. I've been on the back of a couple of those, and that's a little gnarly and scary.
Oh, yeah.
And like...
People... That's the number one injury.
Yeah.
And all throughout Asia for every traveler over there.
Yeah.
After like, you know, dengue fever or something like that. I mean... That's even more rare, but the most common is all motorbike accidents.
Yep. And so it's one of those things, but sometimes Bangkok, the traffic is unlike anything you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And
it's bad.
Only way to get through it.
Walk.
Or take a scooter.
Yeah.
Sit on the back of a, and when I first got there, I'm like, I'm not doing it. And then you're
so these are like cabs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
you just flag them down?
No. There are those guys with the orange vests, mm-hmm. that you can flag down, and they're all cash. But there's Grab, which is the, if anyone in your audience is going to be traveling through Asia, most of the Asian, Southeast Asian countries, China doesn't have it. I don't think Japan has it, but Cambodia, Vietnam, Indonesia, Thailand all have Grab, which is like Uber.
Mm-hmm.
You can order food on it, but they have taxis and motorbikes.
Oh, okay.
So you can ride on the back of a motorbike. But this is the thing too, like you're in Bangkok and you start, you know, the cost of living, if you're making American money online, then everything is great. If you're living there making those wages there, like you're an English teacher or something, then you have to, you know, then they're going to be paying you
in Thai baht and
Thai wages.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be making $6,000 a month. You're going to be making $1,800 a month or whatever.
Is that the problem? What about doing comedy? How do they pay you?
Same thing. Well, because the cost of living and everything is there, the wages are lower, so the ticket prices are lower. So you're not making as much, even if you headline. And because you have to look at the expat. Well, let me just say this about the cab thing real quick. Like a taxi ride will be 150 baht, which is about $5, right? To get a 20-minute cab ride or whatever, 15, 20-minute cab ride. The motorbike will be 35, 40 baht. It'll be $1.50. So, like, that's how most of the Thais are traveling, is because, like, sitting in the back of a cab for $5 is a little pricey. Getting on the back of a motorbike for $1, or in some cases 80 cents, is more doable, you know? And,
right.
And it's faster.
Okay.
Because they can go, they drive in the middle of the, you know. But same thing with, now doing stand-up, all of these expats, like there's no 200-seat comedy club. No, it doesn't exist. There's a 140-seat room in Bangkok that I have not played yet called the Bangkok Comedy Club. It's been there a while. There was another club that was about 100-some seats on Khao San Road. That one was open for about 2 years and went out of business. There was Kung Fu Comedy in Shanghai that was 100 some seats. That's out of business. Singapore and Hong Kong have like 100, 150, 200 seat rooms, I think, 150 seat rooms. But most of the rooms you're going to play are going to be 50, 60 seats, the back of some bar, some converted thing. And you just got to understand the number. So like, you know, Bangkok is a city of 15 million people or whatever. It might even be higher if you count all of the Thais who live in the provinces, whose home address is in the province, but they live in Bangkok. So it's probably more like 18 million people live there.
Yeah.
But to crunch those numbers, you're talking about there's maybe 800,000 expats in Bangkok, spread out over a 30-mile radius.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get another maybe 100,000 people visiting or something. So you have... You're really only, it's not a big market. You got to look at it like that's Milwaukee.
Yeah.
That's the size of Milwaukee, is about 1 million people. So you're not, and that's 800,000 to 1 million expats, not yeah. Americans. That's Canadians, Europeans, like it's everybody. Yeah. And
Brits. And so it's like, but even the English-speaking locals, they're not coming.
Some are. But again, the English-speaking locals, it's the percentage of, it's the English-speaking locals in Thailand who probably either went to an international school in Thailand and their English is really good, or they studied abroad.
Right.
But again, they're a small percentage of people.
Yeah.
So in the audience, I'm telling you, every show I've ever done, and this is consistent throughout Asia just about, except China, and now Japan is different, but it's usually anywhere from 6 to 15 countries represented. And, you know, there'll be 25 people in the crowd and with two or three Thais.
Yeah.
And everybody else is from all over the place.
Right.
And whereas, and so again, the ticket price is, it's not a $30 ticket price. It's a $6, $7 ticket price.
Yeah. And you get a piece of that. $6, buddy.
But when your rent is.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's all relative, of course. But is there like a local Thai comedy scene amongst the locals? I mean, in the Thai language? I mean, because stand-up is everywhere now. I mean, I've seen it in languages around the world. Because, you know, they know, they've learned over the years. It's almost like the 80s comedy boom mm-hmm. in America, that it's a cheap form of entertainment. Just, you know, like karaoke.
And Netflix. Because Netflix has Netflix Thailand, Netflix China. Netflix yes. has... So
there's Thai comedy specials?
Yeah, every country now sure. just about has some comedian from their country who's done a big special. And because Thai has a big, you know, most countries just will do like soap operas in the news. But Thailand has like scripted game shows. They have like, you know, American Idol type shows.
Yeah.
And so there are Thai comedians that do shows in all Thai. And they're huge names,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're so there's that, but the expat, I mean, that whole tour I did through Vietnam was all like the back room of a bar or upstairs of a bar yeah. or, I mean, the most like decked out show I've done was in Pattaya at a hotel where they converted a conference room.
Uh-huh.
And that was the nicest, like, and it was like an 80 seat room or 90 seat room. And it was like, wow, this is cool. So but then again, it's all relative. You know, you can get round trip flights around Asia for $70, $80.
Right.
So a lot of times they'll pay your flight, they'll put you up for a couple of nights, and they'll give you a little bit of money. But again, like if your monthly expenses are, let's say, $2,000 and you're coming home with $200 in your pocket,
yeah,
that's not bad. You know, like,
yeah.
Whereas for us, you know, we'd be making 10 times that. But again, then I'm, you know, my rent was so it's, yeah. I don't know. It's sort of,
I mean, you got to tie in a lot of gigs to pay the whole thing, but you can't, for supplemental.
It's, income. I'll say this. You couldn't just live in Asia and just be a road comic.
Right.
Like I'm making money online doing, you know, podcasting and stuff like that. You have to do stuff like that. And then I'm also starting this late night talk show there.
Or be retired and have like, you know, whatever income and, you know.
Well, that's the big thing too. The retirees, whatever. I mean, yeah, you know, that, you know, you're getting a fixed pension, which would make it really challenging here.
Yeah.
But there you live great.
Yeah. I mean, the main reasons for is cost of living and, you know, for people who, you know, the expats of a certain age, like our age and older, it's that and the healthcare, because it's the one thing here that could really bankrupt us. You know, if it's bad enough, it could just drain everything we have. And so, you know, if you're like, I'm at the age now where it's like, you know, I won't be getting, if we still have Medicare, it'll still be, you know, 7-8 years away or more. They keep raising it. So until your Medicare kicks in. So there's a lot of like late 50s, early 60s people that are just kind of, you know, they'll come, they still plan to come back once they can get Medicare. But until that happens, you know, like they've sold a business or they yeah. lost their job or something and, you know, having to go buy health insurance on the open market here as someone in their 50s and 60s, it's huge.
Yeah.
It's more than, you know, sometimes their mortgage, you know? And so it's like, okay, we have a friend, Bob, you know, Gillespie, who moved to Costa Rica. You know, again, he was like, you know, he got his kid grew up and he can, you know, work remotely and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So it's, everybody's in a different boat now, and that's, and now you can, you have a podcast. These things didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, before, so you can make money online for whatever. And speaking of podcast, what did you get in? What are you working on, Graham? There's my plug setup. Oh, how do you
nice
like that?
Plug setup. God, that's great.
Graham, what's going on?
I've been doing a podcast.
Byron Allen.
Thank
Graham,
you.
Graham, you work online. What's happening?
You had an incident with cereal,
yeah,
right?
You like roller coasters?
Just beautiful setup. I love getting pimped into a joke. I've been doing government secrets for years now with my friend Lee Camp for four or five years. We do that twice a month. We live stream it, and there's an audio podcast you can listen to where Lee and I just find stuff that the United States government has done that is readily information that's readily available that you might not be aware of. So that check that out. But more importantly, I have a GoFundMe for, I'm doing this late night talk show in Bangkok, and it's called Hollywood Asia Tonight. It's going to be sort of an American style late night talk show with some, you know, like Hollywood guests, but a lot of Thai, because there's all this really talent. There's a lot of talent in Thailand and all throughout Asia, really, that we don't know about. Singers, musicians, comedians, really, really amazing people. So I want to do this. And Bangkok is such a cool, interesting city. And part of the thing, like we were talking about earlier, I want to help dispel the stereotypes that Bangkok is only for the like lady boy,
you know, right, for sin.
Yeah. Soy cowboy stuff or whatever. So, and there's this funny, the people, Thais are funny anyway, but the Bangkok Thai is a unique type of person. The way Letterman used to make Manhattan the character in his show, I want to do that with Bangkok. So if you go to grahamelwood.com, you'll see my GoFundMe, and just throw a couple bucks in it. You're helping, you know, this is something that I don't think Hollywood would just let me do. Most of the stuff I've done in my career, it's been doing it myself, you know, like just getting some guys together. We did Podfest or raising money to do earbuds, or, you know, I did the Socialist Christmas album last year, and yeah. I did that myself. And this is how you have to do it.
So partly from, apart from Vietnam and Thailand, you've got a chance to go around Asia a little more. Mm-hmm. Have you been any place that really kind of like blew you away that you recommend? I still haven't been to mainland China. I'm hoping to do that.
Dude, you got to go to mainland China.
I'm supposed to go to Shanghai in October.
That's a fantastic city. And, yeah. And so I was in Beijing 3 weeks ago for the first time in 10 years. And you want to talk about how the comedy scene has changed. So when I was there 10 years ago, it was what I described of these other Asian countries, expats in the audience, English-speaking shows. Now, and I remember there was like two or three Chinese comics that I knew. Mm-hmm. Two of them were women, and they were all like, oh, don't tell my parents. Like, now, the club owner called me, said he wanted to bring me back to this comedy club in Beijing. And he goes, Graham, just so you know, it's different now. 50 to 60% of the audience is Chinese who studied English, and they're like going to comedy to learn more English.
Oh.
There's now a whole Chinese comedy scene. In the club I was at, above us, on the floor above us, was another 60, 70 seat room, all in Mandarin, all in Chinese, all the comics were Chinese, everyone in the crowd was Chinese. And I was like, and I heard, I was in the stairwell waiting to go on, and I could hear the laughter upstairs. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. And so mainland China is its own thing, man. Like it, and it's, you need to go. And I went to the China Film Museum in Beijing, because they have a whole history of film. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. And yeah, China, you should go to it, especially if you're raised in America where it's like, oh, the evil commies. It's like, it's just a different type of government. They're really intrusive. Well, so is America. I mean, I don't know. The Patriot Act, was that... Like,
so my question, did the laughter from the Chinese crowd upstairs, did that cover up that sweeten your laughter?
Just waiting to land that one joke in there, Mike.
I didn't know how to word it. God damn it.
Yeah.
It was like, was it nice to hear laughs from upstairs from your show?
Yeah, whenever I was in a dull spot, we just get quiet for a second. I get a laugh from up
there's
top.
Some laughter. I remember what that sounds like.
I'll take a piece of that.
So did you get to go to, have you been to Angkor Wat, or did you?
I went to Angkor Wat when I was in Thailand the first time a year and a half ago, and okay. that's a must.
So you've been to, you went over to Cambodia. Did you just go to Siem Reap, or did you go around?
I went to Siem Reap, and then and just toured around. I was in Siem Reap for like 3 days, and I did Angkor Wat one day, and then I did like the Killing Fields Museum and all that stuff's pretty heavy. But I know you can still go there now. There was a border conflict with Thailand and Cambodia, but right before I left, they had come to a ceasefire, which was good. But yeah, Angkor Wat, it's one of those, like, I've been to the Great Wall of China. I've been to Angkor Wat. It's one of those things, like, it's amazing. You got to go.
So you came here you caught a flight. We should tell people, you came back here to do some voiceover work, which was nice. But you were playing in Osaka at a club. So, well, how was the club in Osaka? What were the crowds like? How is Osaka? I still haven't been to Osaka. I've been to Tokyo. I've been to the old city?
Kyoto.
Tokyo, Kyoto, and in between, but I haven't really been to Osaka. So,
well, it was my first time to Osaka. So again, I hadn't been in Japan in about 10 years either. I've been to Tokyo several times. And well, first I did the Tokyo Comedy Club. So this is another thing.
And I played that one for a night.
Yeah, it's cool. It's only been open 3 years, but it's doing similar to what was happening in Beijing, where more and more Japanese people are coming to the show to learn English. And they're doing some shows in Japanese, and there's some Japanese comics that are starting to blow up there, like this woman, Yuri. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, but she's half American, half Japanese. And she's done really well on social media. And Tokyo Comedy Club has a very good social media presence. And so that was really interesting. And the Tokyo Comedy team was like, wow, it was really cool. And then I went to Osaka and did the Osaka Comedy Club by these two guys, Tony and Ed. And that club's been open since 2011. It's the first ever English-speaking comedy club. And it's 7 nights a week. I mean, they do shows every night. And it's this cool little basement bar. You know, it's like a New York comedy club or jazz club or something. And again, it's like 40 seats maybe, packed out, 50 mm-hmm. seats. It's a Canadian guy and a British guy, and their model, their demographic is a little different. It's almost all tourists. And we were talking about that after one of the shows, about how they're trying to crack the code and kind of, they're looking at the Tokyo Comedy Club's model. They did all this social media to start attracting, every crowd I did in Tokyo was a mix of Japanese people, expats living in Tokyo, and tourists.
Yeah.
Whereas Osaka was all tourists.
Okay. So they want to get some locals in there.
They're trying to get some locals in there.
Do they do any Japanese shows, language shows?
They're working on that. But every comic had at least one Japanese comic on it. Every show I did in Osaka had, and one guy, God, this dude was so funny. His name is, I think it was Genko Hiroshima. And he goes on stage and he goes, "Hi, my name's Genko Hiroshima. I know you hear my last name and you think, oh, too soon." He did all these jokes about
his
last name.
That's a great joke.
It's a beautiful joke. And then he goes, "Some people think it's a stage name." He goes, "No, this is my given name. If I was going to pick a name, I would have picked Pearl Harbor." A great joke.
I like that.
A great joke. It's like some people think, oh, that's too mean. I mean, it's better, I guess, than calling myself Steve 9/11. Gorgeous jokes. Genko Hiroshima, look him up online. He's a funny dude. So there is, again, it's this, but this is the thing that, and this is almost anywhere outside of LA and New York for the most part, but definitely in Asia, because of just, there aren't that many shows. There's not 200 seat clubs with $30 ticket prices. Almost very few people are full-time comics.
Right.
Because you just have, it's just, you know, a city the size of Bangkok or Japan. I mean, like New York City has how many clubs in it? Like LA has how many clubs in it? I mean, Chicago, where we start, when we were starting in the 90s, there was 12 full-time clubs in the Chicagoland area. I mean, 12. We could all fill our calendars.
Yeah, I counted 14, I think, when I started.
Yes.
Yeah. And then within a year and a half, there was like five left or something. Like it at least still, been cut by half. But still, it was a
five.
Lot.
Five.
Yeah.
You know, still, like, there's still two Zanies and then however many else clubs in Chicago today. Yeah. So it's like, you could still today live in Chicago and probably make your living as a road comic if you could get the gigs and travel around.
Yeah.
I'm sure
keep your costs down, sure.
Yeah.
But I don't wanna, but
my point is the economics don't make sense for that yet in Asia.
Yeah.
To where you can just be that. So every comic has some type of day job for the most part. But it was the Osaka, man, Osaka is a really cool city. I Tokyo's awesome, but it's so big. It's almost like too much for me. Mm-hmm. Osaka's sort of like Chicago to Tokyo's Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'd get on the trains in Osaka, it was rush hour, and it wasn't like nuts. I'm trying to get to the train and Tokyo has like 10 train lines. Like I'm just like lost.
Oh, yeah. And like Shinjuku Station or something. I think they said there was like 200 and something exits.
Yeah.
For one station. That's just how big it was.
I'm walking
it's
around.
Like tentacles all under the ground.
I don't know where I'm going. This line, that line. The thing didn't, you know, beep, beep. But like Osaka was a really cool city. And then I took an hour train ride up north to Kyoto and spent a day in Kyoto before I flew back here.
Okay. Yeah, it's cool.
But Osaka's really, and what they were saying in Osaka, they're very dependent, since they're tourists, it's all seasonal.
Oh,
so
right.
in the spring during the cherry
blossoms. Yeah.
Yeah. March, April, May, June, it's packed. And then summer it's dead. Fall it picks back up again, and then winter it dies down again.
Yeah.
And so they were just telling me about that, but it was like, because what happens, everybody comes up to Osaka for the cherry blossoms, and then they then spend a day trip to Kyoto, and everyone goes up to that part of the country for that.
So we took the bullet train to Kyoto, but Osaka's on the way, or it's the next stop, or one of them.
Kyoto's on the way, so you go Kyoto first, and then over to Osaka.
Okay, so a lot of people are going to
Osaka.
And if we had more time, we would have gone to Osaka, but we just didn't do it. But yeah, Japan is hard to go wrong there.
I mean, that's great. Anywhere you go in Japan's awesome. I mean, Tokyo's fantastic. Don't let me scare you off. It's a great city, and it's its own unique thing. But also, if you can, like, I went to Kamakura, which is about an hour or so outside of Tokyo. It's the thing. It's like if you just came to America and only went to Manhattan, I mean, that's cool, but you missed, there's all this other stuff to see. So that's the thing I would recommend with Japan. Sure, fly into, see Tokyo. See all the crazy stuff in Tokyo. Tokyo is amazing, but then take the train out. I took the bullet train to Osaka. It was awesome. I've taken high-speed rail in China, Russia, and Japan.
Yeah.
But not in America.
I know. I know. Every time we're on it there, it's just like, oh, why don't we have these?
Yeah.
Come on. It's so good. At the least, the East Coast. You know, at the very least, there's no reason we shouldn't be able to go to Boston to D.C. in 4 hours total, stopping in New York and Philly along the way. You know, it's just...
There's some high-speed rail on the East Coast.
I mean, there is the Acela and stuff like that, but
it's not. It's not.
It's half the speed, and it's expensive.
Well, you know... It's unrealistic for America to do this, because it'd be one thing if we were the richest country in the history of the human race and didn't have the money, but we're just a poor little struggling country just trying to get by.
We'll get there, buddy.
One of these days.
We'll get there.
One of these days.
So when do you head back? You don't even know. You don't even know when you're going to head back.
I'll probably go back next week, because there's already more stuff, work to be done. I'm getting more shows in Thailand, and there's a lot of these resorts in the Southern Islands are starting to do shows, and me being out there... it's you know, there's not a lot of headliners there. There's like three or four guys maybe. So, it's cool. And I dig living in Thailand, and I can walk to my hot yoga studio and swim laps in the pool on my roof. And then I love that I'm just an hour and a half flight to some other. Bangkok is really great situated because you're an hour to 2 hours from
just about anywhere.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Bali, Vietnam. I mean, anywhere. I mean, the longest flight is like Japan is like 6 hours, five, 6 hours mm-hmm. maybe. It's like 4.5, 5 hours to Beijing.
Yeah. When I was looking at flights through to Nepal, that was one of those. So you either have to go to like, you either go through Tokyo, Hong Kong, or Singapore, mm-hmm. usually. Those are the, you know, those are the main ones.
And all those cities are all, I mean, Singapore is awesome. Singapore is awesome.
It's just expensive.
Yeah. But it's clean, safe. I mean, it's like the food's great. I mean, all these places are amazing. I mean, they're all like Bali. I mean, not just Bali. Indonesia's right there with all of these islands.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like, I mean, Bali's cool, but it can be a little touristy now. And like, I mean, dude, Malaysia? I haven't even been to Kuala Lumpur yet.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay.
I got to go there.
Yeah, I've been there. That's pretty, it's pretty cool. Worth checking out. The only my only downside of it was like they don't have really, you know, they tear down a lot of their history in terms of for progress. And just like, no, I want to see those old buildings.
Yeah.
And then it was like, no, we got this brand new mall. It was like, yeah, it looks like all the other malls.
Yeah.
Just, I want to see the old stuff. Don't stop tearing it all down. But yeah, well, it sounds like an amazing experience. Welcome back. And one more time, give a give your plugs out. Where can people follow you? You on Instagram anymore?
I'm on Instagram. Go to grahamelwood.com. I'm on Instagram. I post a lot of stuff on Instagram, and that's the main one. I post clips, stand-up clips are on there, and just clips from traveling. And then I have a Laughs Around the World, which is a little travel series I put together from that last tour in Asia. And the first two episodes are exclusively on my Patreon. Which is patreon.com/GrahamElwood. But just go to GrahamElwood.com. You get all my social media. You can go to throw some money at the GoFundMe. And if you're in Bangkok and in late March or April, maybe even in May, we're going to be shooting this TV series. We just got a production company signed on board, and it's got a big distribution platform. So got investors now on board. So you can just be a part of this cool thing. And if you're in Bangkok, come and be in the studio audience. If you support me on the GoFundMe, you know.
Okay.
So go to grahamelwood.com.
I'm going to alter my normal, while people bring in their garbage cans, I'm going to alter my normal ending question and say, since you've been in a lot of places around the world, and I'm not going to ask you what you've learned from all that because you've answered that before, but how are you different from before this late, from moving, than you were now? I mean, how has this, even this past year of living abroad, changed you, if it has?
I think I'm less American. Okay. I think I'm really learning how to slow down, because that's really, the ties are just like, hey man, relax. And I'm like, wow, I can't.
You're not known for having any high energy or you must have like frightened them.
I know, I can be a little intense, so yeah, I have to dial that down. And really, because it's considered very offensive to be in a store and be like, hey, excuse me.
To
lose your head. And so you got to really, and I like that about myself. I like that, you know, and I started doing this when I was living in Hawaii, is I try to find a new, since Bangkok is this massive city, I'm like, I want to find a new thing every day. So every week I try to do one new thing every week. And I've explored all these different Buddhist temples, and I'll just go there and meditate for a half an hour in front of some like 500-year-old Buddha. And I just dig that vibe, man. I dig the energy. I dig the culture. I, you know, I've studied a lot of, you know, Asian martial arts and Asian philosophy. And I just feel it's in line with me more than, you know, America has some wonderful things in it. America's, it's, you know, it's great to be back here and see everybody, and there's cool stuff and infrastructure and that thing. But I wish more people had the opportunity to see like what's important and what isn't. I'm sure you get this a lot on your show. Somebody who had some big high octane job and then they, And not that I was some big corporate guy or whatever, but you know, I've always been an entertainer, and I love being an entertainer, and I love show business. And I, you know, there's a huge talent pool in LA, and I do miss that. The best, I mean, anything you want in front of the camera, behind the camera, voice act, anything. And so I like being around those type of creative people that where everyone's like, let's do this. But I think there's an opportunity to create that vibe out there, because there are some creative, talented people, and Bangkok has, you know, it's really just, and as we get older, just reflecting on like what's important in life and what isn't. And if I'm running around just scraping by to pay my bills, what is that, you know? And you know, what's important is like hanging out with people you want to hang out with and doing stuff you like doing and experiencing new things, you know? because we're not on this planet forever. We had a friend who passed away last year. You know, Becky was awesome. She was a cool person. And so the older you get, the more people you know are going to die. And so, I don't know. I just said, go for it. You know, I don't have anything holding me back here. It'd be one thing if I had to take care of a sick parent or I had kids or something like that. Or if I had some big job here or business that I had to do. But I don't know. I say travel. I say get out there and getting out of your comfort zone and being in a place where, and I've been in this situation before, but where I'm a foreigner, man. I am a foreigner there. It's even, I spent time in Latin America. You know, I lived in El Salvador for a couple of months 2 years ago, and that was cool, but I can blend into Latin America.
Yeah.
Just 'cause I got dark hair, dark eyes, and my Spanish is okay. I speak Portuguese as well. Like I can, they look at me like, oh, you're some kind of Latino. Because I learned Portuguese before I learned Spanish, I speak Spanish with a Portuguese accent. So they just assume I'm Brazilian.
Okay.
And I'm a surfer. And they're just like, you're Brazilian, right? In Asia, I'm the foreigner. Yeah. There's no two ways about it.
There's no hiding.
There's no hiding it. And not that they're mean to me or rude to me, but it's a nice thing to like, I gotta be aware of how I conduct myself. Everyone's paying attention to me. And, you know, I like having to be more polite and more calm. And again, not that I was running around yelling at everybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just saw it in the CVS yesterday. There was like a line and this guy was like, can somebody, you know,
yeah.
And just that attitude is kind of permissible. And that's, and to LA and smaller towns are less that way, but I was just like, wow, that would never go down in Thailand. No one would do that at all. A tourist would, and all the and they'd all look at him and go, oh, look at this farang. That's the term. It's means foreigner, but it's a little bit of an FU on top of it.
Right.
So, man, I think that's the thing that's affected me or changed me is I really see myself living there. And I think my favorite place in the earth that I would want to live, and this is my goal, is like move to Oahu, because that is the best. That is literally geographically, culturally, 1 foot in America, 1 foot in Asia, and that's the thing I dig, and the beach and the outside and the hiking and being in nature.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan.
Yeah.
So fun to show everybody.
Make it happen and come out to Bangkok to be in the show.
All right. Well, thanks for doing this, man. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for having me, man.
Sure. Graham Elwood, everybody.
Travel doesn't always go to plan, and that's where the best stories live. Welcome to the Winging It Travel Podcast, where you don't just hear about travel, you feel it. I'm James Hammond, and I'm podcasting my own journeys from the road, sharing immersive soundscape episodes that drop you right into the moment from busy streets to remote mountains. Along the way, I sit down with local people and fellow travelers to tell honest stories about life, culture, and chase an adventure beyond the routine. No filters, no fake perfection, just stories to tell, tips to share, and experiences to inspire. Search Winging It Travel Podcast on any podcast app and let's wing it.
Quick question. Do you want travel tips from people who have actually been there?
Our show is co-hosted by Tim Johnson, an award-winning travel journalist who's been to more than 145 countries around the world. And I'm David Brody, the other co-host who's been travel podcasting for 20 years while traveling to 50-plus countries around the world.
In about 10 or 20 minutes per show, we break down a destination with the kind of insight you usually only get from long guidebooks or hours of research.
So if you want expert advice, zero fluff, and travel inspiration that you can actually use, search for Travel Intend wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can also find us at voyescape.com.